Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host of Women Who Lead, and with me today, I have a new leading lady with us, and I am delighted to say that our leading lady today is Lynn Ejar, who's the president and the CEO of iBiz247 International Business Network. So I think we're going to have an amazing conversation today about navigating global business, and Lynn, say hello to all of our listeners, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you very much, Michelle. I'm honored to be here. I'm very excited to share some of my experiences and what I've learned through this journey.
Well, and you have quite a background in international business and all of that with the Navy. I know you mentioned that, and the Latin America desk, and then also with the City of San Diego and then the World Trade Center in San Diego. So I'm dying to know, you know, from the standpoint, if we can start out, it's like, what are maybe one or two things that when you're working with clients, what are the biggest things they have questions on as it relates to navigating kind of the global business environment? Because I want to really understand all the array of things that you do, but what are some of the challenges that your clients call you for and that you really work with them on navigating global business?
Well, actually, an array of different topics. It seems that every call I have gotten, whether it was working at the Navy or at the City or at the World Trade Center or even now with iBiz247, it seems that every question, every call is very different. So there's really no little cheat sheet that we can, you know, pull out. But that would be nice. So
we'll take one. No. We'll take one thing. It sounds like there's 5,000, but we'll start with one or two. I mean,
Yes, it's interesting because a lot of it, and you know, it has been my expertise, but a lot of it is how you should do business in terms of etiquette and cultural differences. How to find that information? Of course, it would be fantastic if I would be able to know all the differences, but we do try to guide them on what things to look for, what things to consider, in order for them to you know, first collect the best information and then apply it when they're with their clients or, you know, traveling or whatnot. But that seems to be the questions are more in that type of a realm. You know, wanting to know more of that. Of course, we get trade agreement questions, and we get processes in doing exports, but that one seems to be, lately at least, the one that has been growing. There's a lot more interest in that.
Cool. Well, you know, and I know we live in a world where it's all about, you know, international business. I mean, we're in the San Diego area, and of course, right close to us is Mexico. And I'm curious, you know, what would be maybe the best way, you know, that somebody who, at least for our listeners, if they do business in other countries, what would be a couple of things you might suggest to them on how they become knowledgeable about the protocol or, you know, what's okay versus not okay as they enter in and they're looking to build relationships or do business in other countries? Any advice on that?
Yes, and of course, it's as you know, sometimes even a challenge within our own culture. So it's never going to be perfect. But there are three things that I typically, you know, suggest. And the first one would be, you know, if you're polite and you smile and you're, you know, open-minded, I think having those things are extremely important wherever you go, because a smile, as you know, is the international gesture or feature that translates to every country. So just, you know, and be open-minded, because you don't know sometimes the reactions that people might have. You might perceive them in a way that according to your culture, but maybe that's not what they are trying to put across. So always keep an open mind and giving the benefit of the doubt that it's, instead of reacting maybe in a negative way, to just, you know, make sure that it's the right message that you're understanding, and not what you think because of your culture.
Let me get specific with you. So I know, you know, as an example, I hear from clients who will go to Dubai, or it's like they'll go to Mexico or Canada or different countries and different continents even, you know, where they will talk about, like, as an example, and again, I'm going to be a little bit, you know, assumptive here, because I know I'm making a broad brush, but I do know, like, some of colleagues of mine that have gone and done international business, they will say, you know, sometimes the meeting time, and especially maybe for, you know, the Far East or something, is when you say at 3 o'clock meeting time, it kind of is a loose number. So you might be sitting there waiting for a period of time, and you're thinking, gosh, how rude, you know, because in America, many times we're like, three means three, you know, I mean, or I lived in a world where it was like, you had to show up 15 minutes earlier, you were late, you know, you used to call that Lombardi time. So what are there some things that maybe one or two or things that you could say, or some nuances that you've seen that are just kind of culturally interesting that you come across as you've done research and you've advised some of your clients? I mean, what are some of the most interesting things you've seen that are kind of protocol or cultural differences when it comes to doing business with other countries?
Yes, well, you touched on probably one of the most important one, which is the time. Typically in Latin cultures and some, you know, Arab cultures as well, they're just used to being on time wouldn't be their first priority, as it would be in the United States or Canada or, you know, some parts of Europe. That is definitely one thing. In that particular case, I typically suggest to be on time. Because you will encounter a lot of people, even in those cultures, that do like and respect, punctuality. So definitely always be on time, but do not get upset if you end up waiting, you know, 15 minutes to an hour or even more. But I do recommend always being on time, no matter where you are, because you might find those that do like punctuality, and it's just you know, better to be safe. There are a lot of, for example, also in Latin America, Middle East, people are used to, when they're having meetings, to interrupt if they get a phone call or if they get a text. They might stop the meeting when it's like, you know, with someone else particularly, or when they're meeting with a lot of people, they just, you know, you'll see them texting in the table, and and it's of course a generalization, because I know a lot of people, in particular from Mexico, that would think that that's very rude, but of course, if you're going to go down there, you might encounter that. And we're actually seeing that a lot more here too. But anyway, that's a cultural thing, you know, that it's, the interruptions are more normal over there. Also, they tend to, again, these cultures, polychronic mostly, they like to involve personal life. I'm actually also, I have a Mexican background, and that's something that I keep doing even here. When I meet people, I want them to be my friends, you know. And when you go down there, you might go to a business meeting, and the next thing you know, you're having lunch or even dinner at the person that you met at their house, you know, with their family, and that's very normal, things that you wouldn't really expect here as much. So those would be some of the top differences that I would talk about people to be aware of
There's tons of them. I look at it and go, gosh, you know, we've migrated so much with different countries, and you know, we're meeting different people from different backgrounds. You know, I'm going to get into the woman versus man thing because I know that's a big deal for our listeners and our audience. But you know, I remember one time I had almost like a cultural attaché when I was in banking, and we were meeting with some folks from Japan. And one of the things that they taught us was that, you know, when you meet someone from Japan, you know, you, first of all, you know, comfortable space for Americans versus Japanese are much different. And then when you get somebody's card, you know, you definitely want to make sure and take both hands, put your fingers on all of the business card, take a look at it, look up, I mean, give it some time and attention, because it's almost like an insult to the person you're interacting with from Japan if you don't give a look-see to that business card. Now, in America, if you do that, it's like, what are you doing? You know, why are you looking over my business card? It's almost the other way. So I would assume you've got all kinds of scenarios to share. But anyway, I just think of some of those because, do as the Romans, and if you do it wrong, it could ruin a relationship, I think is what we're saying, right?
Exactly. And this last example, I completely agree with you. And, you know, when I actually used to, work with some elected officials in my previous jobs, I would actually say, because they would always get very confused when we hosted, you know, Asian diplomats or visitors or whatnot. It's like, do I bow? Do I hold the card? Do I not put the card in that? And my rule of thumb to them was like, well, okay, here's the thing. If you take the card and put it in your pocket, there's a chance you will offend whoever you're with, especially Asian. If you take the card and give it a little bit more time and observe it, well, they might think it's, you know, some people might think it's weird, but at least you're not offending anybody, you know? So
right.
So I would always say just think about it. If you were on the other side, would it offend you or would not? And try to go with that, you know? And I would always remind them before any meeting, you know, especially with Asian guests. But yes, that's kind of like the rule of thumb, I think. Well, it's better to be overly polite, even looking a little weird, than running the risk of being rude, if that makes sense.
Well, and I totally agree. And I think international business and protocol is really important just because we have so many cultures that are migrating and doing business together and looking for opportunities. And I mean, tell me, what was the reason you started your company? I mean, was it because you saw that there were, I mean, with your background in the Navy and with the World Trade Center in San Diego and with the city, what was it that prompted you to say, gosh, I think I've got a great business model here? I mean, what was kind of the broad vision, and, you know, where did you get the shiny light that said, I need to do this? What was the prompt and the push to start your own firm providing these cultural services and research?
Yes. Thank you. Yes. What I saw mostly that was very frustrating to me was that disconnect between. And it's obvious, there's a lot of organizations that help, there's a lot of, because in international business, well, business in general, but international business, there's a lot of aspects that come into play, and it would be almost impossible to be an expert, you know, for an organization to be an expert in all. You know, the Department of Commerce will focus on trying to help you export, and there's other organizations that will help you with your cultural awareness, and there are other organizations. But there's a very big disconnect between these organizations. And every time you need, say you follow, you know, you're ready. I'll use the example of exporting. There are pretty much set steps that you have to take. And it seems that at each step you have to get help from a different organization at some point. That to me was very frustrating, especially if, like, you were trying to get the information on the Internet. The information will be there. But it's a nightmare to try to find out where it is. You have to go to thousands of different websites. Sometimes you don't know if they're legit or not. So with all of those points in mind, first of all, the first step was to create a one source and using technology on the Internet to be available not only for the people where I live, but people around the world, where they could go to one site and we would be able to guide them as to where to find the information they're looking for at the moment of where they are in, let's say, in the case where you're saying in exporting, for example, or any actually activity in international business. Everybody's going to be a different stage, so we try to make sure that we organize this site and we opened it to, like as I said, anybody, for them to be able to find where they're at and try to get all the resources that they will need. And of course, also because sometimes you don't know what you need at that moment. So at least there you can kind of take a look of all the resources that you can access. Then after that, we had created this huge data bank of information and resources. We work also very closely with the Department of Commerce. Our local chapter here in San Diego offices are fantastic. And, seeing how we could support them, we started with questions, redirecting people to them and getting help there. And anyway, with their help and other people and organizations that have been supportive, we started thinking that connecting them in the background would make a lot of sense because there wasn't any network in technology-wise that connects. So their job is to connect people internationally, but there's no technology that they can access in the back to do that, and that provides them with all the resources that we have collected and kind of being a one-stop shop for them and for the people that they are, their audiences that they're helping. So the second step, as I said, was create that and be able to provide all these resources to them as well so that they didn't, Chambers of Commerce, World Trade Center, so that they in turn didn't spend any money on research and they are getting all their information from the same source, which is us, and all the resources that we collect are from official places. So
I'm curious.
Does that make
curious,
sense?
Yeah, it does. It totally does, Lynn. And I'm curious, how do you, when you get a company that calls you and they say what? Are they already doing business internationally and they say we need to fine-tune what we're doing? Or most of the people and companies that come to you are like, we're thinking of getting into this international, flair and we really need some advice and some research done. How is it, or is it all over the board? I'm kind of curious, do you see that people are already doing business there and they want to tighten it up, or are they just coming to you because they're thinking of doing business in other places?
Both, and I would say that the majority are people, the smaller businesses trying to start out. We seldom get, the large, huge companies because they already have their department, they have their people, and they know what they're doing. But we get the ones with the idea, I know I want to export, I have a prototype. And what we do with them is guide them to maybe help them do market research. And we actually have a service where we work with some even universities to work on market research for them to try to help them identify what markets to sell to. And once they know that, how to package your product, what things to look for. And, of course, as I said, when it comes to exports, we really like to partner up with the Department of Commerce just to make sure that, everybody's in a safe ground. And but the Department of Commerce, for example, they're extremely busy. And if you go to them with just an idea and I want to export, it's probably not going to be the best. They're not going to be able to help you as much. They're the ones that kind of take you when you're ready with your package and handhold you to the next step. So the majority are people that have an idea that they don't know exactly how to start. And on our site, they find guides, by step checklists that are very, very helpful. And then the other companies that you mentioned, that also contact us are mostly for support services. Like, we'd like to advertise our products. We have this collection of products. We want to advertise and display them for people to see them. We're ready to export. So we have a marketplace, a trade lead board where they put display their products to be seen, you know, around the world, or if they offer services and they want to expand, you know, in that way too, we help them with that. Or if they want lists of potential customers, we also work, as I said, with the universities to try to get them that research. So, yes.
You said you did a lot. You were serious. You have a lot of different layers that you have to your company. I love it. But, you know, yeah, I mean, it's like that. It's not just a one-trick pony here. I'm curious for our listeners, and I want to get into the women versus men thing, is, you know, if our listeners have any interest in reaching you, how do you want people to contact you? Because I know you might have some interest in international business with our community. Just any thoughts? Do you want people to go to your website? Do you want them to call you? What would you recommend?
Yes, whatever they feel more comfortable with, they can first go to our website to take a look at what we have there. The website is ibiz247.com, which is ibiz247.com. They can also send me an email. My email is lhijar@ibiz247.com. And I'd love to hear from anybody that would like to contact us.
You're a busy lady.
Yeah.
I love it. You know, here's something that I'm curious about, because I, you know, and again, if any listeners are interested, check out your website. And again, it's ibiz247.com. So ibiz247. I think that's a cool domain name as well. You know, one of the things that we haven't touched on, and for our community, which is mostly professional women. And, you know, again, I know that there's different cultural, let's say, challenges, you know, how women are perceived or treated in different countries. What would be some thoughts you have on what you see as trends for women that are doing business internationally? Is it rough waters? Is it getting easier for women to be respected, you know, internationally when they are in a business, you know, or a leadership position, and they are, you know, trying to navigate an account or a relationship? What are some of the trends you see for women specifically, you know, and where that comes into being successful with international business?
Yes. I definitely think it's getting much better, much better. In fact, it was interesting. I was looking at some statistics a few months ago about how a lot of countries that you would never, well, that you wouldn't really obviously think about, that a very large percentage of their CEOs are women, like South Korea. That's actually the country that has most, their highest percentage of women CEOs. I mean, and don't quote me, but I think it was like around 20%. I mean, it was a pretty large number, whereas the United States was down to like about 8 or 9. So it is interesting, because I have the idea that the U.S. Is very supportive of women, and we are, but other countries are really, really catching up very quickly. I mean, we even start seeing more and more women presidents, right? When I looked at those statistics, it was actually to give a presentation about women to a group of business, actually most of them, I'll say businessmen, because the majority were men, from the Middle East. And to my surprise, during my presentation, the tables turned, and they ended up presenting to me with a lot of excitement about how more and more women are being directors in big corporations in Saudi Arabia. Emirates. Yes. And they were like, you know, one of them, and even ministers, there was a minister there economy for Bahrain, I believe. And he was saying, you know, we are very excited because we never gave them a chance in our culture. And now we're doing that, and some people still don't feel very comfortable, and we have to you know, appreciate that, because it's been many, many centuries like that. But we are very pleasantly surprised, without offending anybody, but that
I think that's great. Those are good. I mean, you know, again, I mean, if I could have my druthers, I'd say, let's rule women, let's rule the world, you know. That's what I'm shooting for. And then it's like, sorry, dude. It's like, it's our time, right, for my male colleagues. But, you know, I'm curious, do you have any tips for women as far as what would you suggest for women if they do find themselves? Like, do you do any consulting for women on how to be more effective, you know, with the protocol? And, you know, I mean, I've had some friends of mine who have gone over to not Saudi Arabia, but over to the Far East, and they've had to wear, you know, cover their heads and, you know, make sure that their face is covered or any of that. I mean, do you find that women have a real tough time with that? Or it's just kind of like when you're in the country, you know, you do as the Romans, right? You follow their protocol.
Absolutely.
Any thoughts on that?
Yes. And number one, don't ever be offended because there's centuries of years of culture being that way. You can't change it in 10, 15 years. So if you go to those countries, do not be offended because you're still going to be, when you go to a business meeting, there might be men that will not even look at you when they're talking, or they won't even talk to you. Don't be offended. It's not personal. It's not, it's just a cultural thing that may hopefully change. It may not, but it seems that it is. I also recommend not to push anything. If that happens, don't try to, to make sure you get the attention by forcing the situation, because that's not going to help in any way at all. If that makes sense.
Good advice. Good advice. I think that one's tough. No, go ahead. One more. And then we're almost out of time, believe it or not. So one more, and then I've got one final question for you. What other advice?
Yes.
I think that's smart.
And,
you know?
It is, absolutely. And but I always think, too, that we should see men as our colleagues, not as someone that we're trying to prove something to or to compete with. We will always be different. And at the same time, I think we should view them as colleagues and a gender that can help us grow, not compete with them, because we're not going to, I just don't.
I say hear, hear. No, I totally agree. And it's like part of me says, you know, when you don't realize that there are women that are very strong, it's like they're very assertive. And, you know, in some scenarios, you've got to adapt based on, like you're saying, the cultural, you know, situation you're in. I mean, I think of that just in any engagement with people overall. It's like you've always got to think of where you're at and the environment you're in, and you kind of like are a chameleon. You adapt to the circumstances. Am I right?
Exactly. And what I do is if I don't feel like I'm, you know, if nobody forces you to be anywhere, you don't, you know, and I don't think you have to put yourself in situations where it's uncomfortable. So,
right.
So yeah, I, you know. So
no, you're all
spot
on.
That I would recommend.
No, I want to leave on a high note. We've maybe got 1 minute left here, my dear. So, Lynn, you know, when you think of the future for you, what are you hoping to build, you know, with your business? Like, what's the kind of big, hairy, audacious goal for you in the next year, if you can share with our listeners? And then we're on a wrap. I can't believe it. But what's the future look like for you in the next year, are you hoping?
Very exciting. We're trying to build this network to be that connector of as many trade service organizations as we can around the world, to be able to help them provide better services to their audience and, you know, grow international business. So we want to be that communications backbone, if you will. That's our biggest goal.
I love it. Well, I want to say thank you for being on our show. You were awesome, Lynn. I look forward to getting to know you more sooner. And thank you for being our leading lady. I want to always thank our listeners for always being loyal and listening to our show. We're going to be back again not only Monday, but next Friday. And next Friday, I want to share that our leading lady will be Julie Davis Farrow, who is the founder and the president of Plantscapers. And our topic is going to be grow a business, thrive, and energize. So to all of our listeners, you have a great weekend. We're here every Friday. And one thing I always love to say is please go out there and empower and support other professional women. So we will see you again on the next show. Have a wonderful weekend. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.